Bernstein Middays on the Score.
Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR. The Score. Get a chance to talk some baseball here with one of the smartest guys out there. His name is Dan Zimborski. He is on Twitter at DZimborski. He is senior writer at Fangraphs, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you hanging in, Dan?
Pretty well. So far, so good. I'm more or less healthy, which is, you know, a pretty good thing at the moment.
Yeah, I'd say so. Something I hadn't thought about, and it was put out there regarding Fangraphs and the stresses that that every industry is undergoing here. And believe me, we know it. After yesterday, we here know it as well as anybody that no one is spared, no business is spared, and with no baseball, it makes it difficult for a business like Fangraphs. And I felt really bad when I thought about the fact that I hadn't been a subscriber, technically, until I saw that note. And I said, well, damn it, it's time for me to be a subscriber. So now I am. And people should know that. And I think feel, frankly, obligated. If you're somebody like I am, who during a show could have five or six tabs open to Fangraphs, or in any baseball discussion we have, know that Fangraphs is critical to what we're doing, that what we've done to make Weighted Runs Created Plus part of the everyday discussion of baseball players, what we've done to make Weighted On Base Average and Expected Fielder Independent Pitching the way we talk about baseball now. I think Fangraphs deserves our support in that regard, to the extent that fans who use it and appreciate it can. And I want to make sure people know that.
Oh, we definitely appreciate the support. It's been, like for most businesses that are kind of part of the sports ecosystem, it's been very tough for us. We've had our first ever layoffs. Even through the Great Recession, we grew. And I mean, we had to leave our freelancers go, cut back some part-timers. All tighten our belts. It's tough right now, and we're, you know, everyone's hoping that when baseball eventually returns, that we'll get back to some semblance of normalcy. So we've done a membership drive because we've always taken, you know, great pains to make sure we don't have anything behind paywalls if possible. So it's been great to see the community rally to our support, because, you know, it's good to see people care about the site and use it and like what it does, because if we had asked for help and it was crickets that asked, maybe we're not doing what we need to do. Maybe people aren't being served by us. So it's been a tough week, but I mean, it's been great to see the support.
Now, something that you've been doing, given all the time that you have on your hands, is using data to discuss the return from injury for pitchers or even position players. And while Noah Syndergaard was your primary subject, you made me mindful of Michael Kopech, of this young stud who's having something as common as Tommy John surgery at this stage of his career. What are you learning in this data about pitchers, about returning from injury, about what matters, what doesn't, where, what's signal and what's noise in this data?
Well, the good thing that we've seen as we, you know, look through the injuries throughout history is that Tommy John surgeries are getting more and more successful. We're at the point now where a pitcher who, you know, has surgery, even a second surgery now, is very, very likely to come back. We've seen velocity get back to pre-injury status. Shoulder injuries, not so much, but, you know, Kopech had an elbow surgery, and, you know, the White Sox have had a spate of Tommy John surgeries last year. You have Dunning and Rodon, of course. So it is good news that doctors are so good at performing the surgery now. There's a lot of experience, and, you know, you have the same kind of group of doctors performing these surgeries with a lot of experience themselves, getting pitchers healthy again. So I'm very, very optimistic about Kopech. I think, you know, there's always some risk, but I think he'll be fine.
Where are the injuries that really change? Where on the body do you start to see long-term issues and actual change in career arc depending on age? I know it's an oversimplification, but I once had an orthopedist in tell me, shoulders don't get better. He said, we can do our best to kind of put them back, but he said, a shoulder doesn't get better. Is that true, or has medicine advanced beyond that?
I mean, medicine's advanced, but shoulder injuries are still devastating. Rotator cuff, labrum, these still end a lot of careers. And really, for hitters, there tends to be a better success rate recovering from these injuries. But you see power stats go down for years after severe hand injuries, wrist injuries. But shoulders are a particular problem. It's still, I wouldn't say a death sentence for the player at this point, but having a serious shoulder injury that knocks you out for a season, that's hard to recover from.
When you start looking at the possibility of a shortened season, and I don't know what numbers you're really using necessarily, whether it's the 100-game season, whether it's an 80-game season, how does something like Zips or Steamer kind of chew over some of the projections, and what is it spitting out regarding what teams may be more affected than others for better or for worse?
Well, when talking on a general level without knowing specific injuries, like, say, the Yankees, you see volatility go up quite a bit in a short season. In the projections, which go game by game and simulate the probability of each game, so you kind of get that swing effect when you simulate a shorter schedule, you see probably the biggest beneficiaries are kind of the marginal teams on the edge of the playoff hunt, teams that may not be there yet, because for them, I'm thinking, White Sox, Rangers, possibly the Padres, the Angels. These are teams that probably are inferior to the other playoff contenders over 162 games. But when you're talking 100 games, it's a lot easier to keep it together. I remember some years ago, I guess 2014, when the Brewers got off to that hot start and they spent the year slowly losing first place. In a 100-game season, they would have run out of time to lose first place, because just in a smaller season, a lesser team, quote-unquote, can defeat a bigger team. You make a one-game schedule, which obviously I hope doesn't happen, and the Orioles have a 1-in-3 chance of making the playoffs. But hopefully we get 100 games and not one game.
How does that change the way we define a pitching staff? And what it means to how many pitchers do you need? How is that going to change the strategy of perhaps using an opener? What do you think the smartest baseball people could do to find a market inefficiency in a shortened season?
Well, I think one of the things that they're doing that we saw during the strike year is they're going to have larger rosters at the start, because there's still a lot we don't know about pitching. Pitching is still incredibly unpredictable. Injuries are incredibly unpredictable. You'll always see a guy who has great mechanics. They say, oh, he'll be fine, he'll never get injured, and then he has two Tommy John surgeries. Chris Sale, of course, has had Tommy John surgery, but when he was a young pitcher and were leaving, everybody in the world thought that he would break down when he moved to the rotation for the Sox. But he didn't. It took a decade for a serious injury of that level to happen. I think you'll see some interesting usage. For instance, reliever inning totals aren't going to get too high, so we might see more of a long reliever type this year. You can throw a guy out there for two innings if you're not concerned about him getting to 80 or 90 innings if you're not careful, because you don't have that same length of schedule. So I think we'll see a lot of creativity. I don't think starters, at least early on, will go super deep into games, especially because teams will have pretty big bullpens to start with the added roster size. But it's interesting because we haven't had a shortened season, in 25 years, and that one ended abruptly. So who knows at this point, I guess. As long as we have a season, please.
Right. But so will the 2020 is going to go there with 81 and 94. Here's the thing. I don't know if you're like this too. You do it for a living, so it's probably not quite the same. I still catch myself when I'm looking down a column of counting stat numbers for a player. I'm like, well, he must have been hurt. Oh, that was an off year. Oh yeah, that was a strike year. And I always do it, and I always say, like, wait a second, my mind should go, it was 81 or it was 94, why there was a certain percentage off of a given counting stat. This is going to be another one way or another.
Yeah, it's funny how baseball kind of works your mind. For instance, I am great at dividing numbers by 162 and giving you a three-digit percentage. I can't do that with 150 games. I can do that with 162. You tell me... you ask me a weird math question and say, Dan, what's 83 divided by 162? I say, oh, that's 0.512, solely because of baseball. But then if they ask me 83 divided by 170, I'll be like, I have no idea.
I was thinking about this too. about people who do what you do, who have minds that know how to look at a spreadsheet or know how to calculate things. You're cursed right now with pandemic stats that you aren't going to be able, you know, like somebody like me, I can look at it and be like, okay, numbers, you know, scroll to the next tweet. Your brain probably is saying, oh, 150,000 people are going to die here. 100,000 people are going to die here. Are you able to turn it off? Or do you still look at some of this data that's being held up on charts or being sent out by the CDC? And does your statistical mind start working out all the doom and gloom stuff?
Oh, it's hard to turn it off, because without baseball, you know, keeping my brain doing things, then I search for other number things to do. And unfortunately, a lot of the numbers that we talk about right now involve COVID-19. I've been saving the IHME data every day, and I've been kind of looking to see where their projections are, where the peaks for each state is, trying to kind of factor in my head the risk of when baseball could come back, what the data show. It is hard to turn it off, and you kind of want to, but it's a little impossible, because there's still work to do, but there's just so much more downtime because there's no sports on, and it tells me how much time I was devoting to sports, because I'll sometimes just sit there with a TV off, looking at the screen, waiting for sports to appear. It's a really, really weird time. And, I remember back over the winter, I was commenting to people, because there were, you know, normal free agent signings, things were happening. I was like, oh, we're finally going to have a normal offseason. I mean, we had no idea, I guess.
If you think you're craving sports, I am literally timing my cardio workout in the basement with when my son and his friends play Fortnite. That is my sports right now. And I do play-by-play, and I second guess, and I heckle, and it's all I've got, and I've learned to like it. You know, this is the one thing where it's people actually competing at something where there's no determined outcome, and a little bit of luck matters and skill matters, and I've actually been vastly entertained by it. So with this time, and with all of the data that exists in baseball history, if you could, is there any like holy grail research project? Is there anything that in this time that you and other analysts, be it Fangraphs or elsewhere, something where you could say, given all the time in the world now and given this historical trove of data, something you could find out that would matter?
Well, I mean, that is the question went off. I've been working on a lot of smaller things. I think the biggest thing left kind of in baseball analysis is predicting injuries. And we still can't really do that, no matter how hard we try. I know we've tried to look at pitch counts in the past. That has, you know, very mixed results. But the problem for a lot of things is we don't have the data. And that's the even more frustrating thing, because we have all this extra time to do our data projects, but we don't have, you know, the kind of, you know, data towards pitchers' arms. I would like to believe, like, in 10 years, they'll have, like, to go along with, you know, pitch FX, they'll have injury FX where they put, you know, they analyze how everybody's shoulder moves and elbow rotates and all that stuff. Teams are closer to that kind of thing because they have a lot of internal data of that type. But that's kind of the biggest frontier left, I think, in baseball analysis, because a lot of the easy questions have been answered at this point.
Dan Zaborski, a senior writer of FanGraphs. I would again urge people, if you are a baseball fan that uses FanGraphs as a resource, as I do, a year-long subscription to be a member is $20. So that's like 5 Starbucks coffees, and you can have an actual membership to FanGraphs and support the work that a lot of smart people do, and I urge you to do so. Dan, love your stuff. We'll continue to follow, and hope we have some baseball to talk about soon.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for all the support. It's really, really appreciated.
Thank you. Best of health, Dan. That is Dan Zimborski of FanGraphs. We have Bears news. Matt Nagy has said what we're trying to do is best for the Chicago Bears, plain and simple, regarding the quarterbacks. Ryan Pace has said Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles are set for, quote, an open competition to become the Bears' starting quarterback. Nagy says Trubisky is embracing the competition. Nagy used the phrase open quarterback competition between Mitch and Nick. There you have it. That is something. I want to know what you think of that. It's official now. There isn't going to be a named starter. There isn't going to be a presumed starter. We have ourselves a good old-fashioned quarterback competition. We will talk about all that that means and find out what you think about it. 312-644-6767. Bears News on the Score. Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. We got news from the Bears teleconference right now. Just to recap, and I want to find out what you think, by the way. I want your reaction to some of this. We're going to turn this sound around when we can. Just so you know, and asking, why aren't you carrying it live? We can't. We're not allowed to. Obviously, we'd love to carry this thing live, but on teleconferences, it's the Bears put in rules and safeguards that don't allow us to do that. However, the moment they are done talking, we're rolling it into the system as it's going on. So when they're done, we'll be able to flip it, and we'll be able to let you hear everything that's being said, because I do think it's important that you hear from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy in their own voices. But what do you think of this? Matt Nagy says, we're trying to do what's best for the Chicago Bears, plain and simple. Use the phrase open quarterback competition between Mitch and Nick. He says Trubisky is embracing competition. Ryan Pace says Trubisky and Foles are set for an open competition to become the Bears' starting quarterback. Nagy also said that guys, especially on the offense, are going to play more in the preseason. Remember, that was on our checklist, what we were talking about in bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. Ryan Pace also says they are not going to comment, or he is not going to comment, on potentially picking up Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option. They have until May to do that. Again, I keep thinking if they were going to do it, they would have done it, no matter what they're talking about and whether or not they're going to talk about it. I think that that's something that if they haven't done it now, I don't know what could change in the intervening time that would change their mind on whether or not to do it. But we're getting a little bit more clarity here, although I have to say this, because I know somebody's going to call me out on this and say, Bernstein, you're the guy that says there's no such thing as a fair quarterback competition. And as long as human beings are involved, that's true. I don't think I've ever seen a competition. I've seen somebody take a job. Everybody gives the Matt Flynn, Russell Wilson, Seattle Seahawks year when they paid all the money to Flynn. For the classic reason, it's like a Mike Glennon deal before the Mike Glennon deal. It's like the best guy who had a couple of good games maybe, and they were able to probably had a good agent. And then the other guy in camp is just so much better that they have to give him the job. I've never seen two guys supposedly on equal footing who were given a template of some kind. They were given an opportunity to say, this is your turn to do this, and now it's your turn to do this, and whoever does it better or whoever completes this many passes in this drill, the way they try to do it, everything is open to interpretation because of what a defense can do. Yeah, sure, he threw an interception, but that wasn't his fault. We can't just look at the numbers. That ultimately, it comes down to a coach having the guy out there that he wants, and or a general manager having the guy out there that he wants. And if they want it badly enough, they'll see what they want to see. If they want it badly enough, they will find reasons. Here's another comment from Matt Nagy. This is from Brad Biggs. Asked who gets the first shot at first reps, he said, when we walk out on the first day, talking about first day of practice, said, when we walk out on the first day, whenever it is, Mitch will be first in the huddle. Okay. That obviously someone has to. And that's probably the benefit of the doubt for the incumbent, would be my guess, is all that is, that they're just saying that you have been here, you get the first shot. And they've said open competition. 260 texter says, I think open competition is a great thing. Either it lights a fire under Mitch and he earns the role with Foles supporting him all the way, or Mitch folds and Foles is the starter. Yeah, I still don't get how the rubber meets the road in the whole motivational thing, or lights a fire under him. Trubisky's issues aren't for lack of trying. They aren't for lack of caring. They aren't for lack of professional seriousness. the guy's supposedly there all the time, and he's wearing the VR goggles, and he's doing everything that's asked of him. The whole light of fire thing, I don't see him saying, wait a second, there's another guy here? Now I've got to be better at reading defenses. No, I mean, he's known his issues. He's known, I mean, it's an ongoing conversation. I wish it were that easy. I almost wish it were like a laziness issue where all of a sudden he snaps to attention and takes his job more seriously or does things better, because that would lead me to believe that some of his problems are correctable by trying harder. And I don't think they necessarily are. You know, coming up at 11 o'clock, Dan Durkin of The Athletic, who does some of the best Bears analysis out there, is going to join us to talk about Nick Foles and talk about what the new scheme, new old scheme for him, the fact that Foles knows the terminology, having cross-pollinated with so many of these guys. And one of the phrases that Durkin uses in his piece is, in this offense, you have to use the tools that are provided to understand what the defense is. And those tools are formational shifts and motion. And you know the reason why you see a person in motion is so the quarterback can see how or if that player is followed. They'll split guys out of the formation. They will shift a tight end from the line to a wing, etc., to see who moves and when. And that's the diagnostic opportunity. And then they're supposed to take a snapshot, take a mental photo after that. You know, you look at the initial formation, you point out the mic, then you get your little diagnostic shifts, take a photo, snap the ball. As the drop is occurring, now it's using the photo that's in your head, having that overlaying the field, still keeping that there, keep knowing what you saw, and now seeing what it looks like. That's what they mean by disguised coverages. That's like, oh, now the safety's tearing his ass back down the middle of the field because it looked like he was going to be up here. He's not up here. And being able to do that all in real time, that's what reading defenses is. There's reading a defense at the before the line, before the snap. There's immediately as you break the huddle and seeing how the initial set. There is the pre-snap after your little movements, your little cues that are designed to give you a look. What are they in? What are they in? What are they in? Who's the mic? Where are they? That's just see all the talking and the pointing. And then once the ball is snapped and all hell breaks loose and everything can stay slow. Nick Foles pretty good at ball placement, pretty good at knowing where those spots are. I don't think that Trubisky all of a sudden, because Foles is there, now is necessarily going to think and realize that he has to get better at certain things just because.
Well, I mean, what's the one thing they always praise about him is his work ethic. He's always there. He's studying the playbook. He's doing everything he can. Well, how is this going to change anything just because somebody else is in there?
I don't know. I've never really kind of bought that because motivation hasn't been an issue for him. He's not going to be now newly motivated to be better at his job because he's got competition. But the fact is, he's got competition, and the other guy just might end up being better than he is and better at what they want. Ryan Pace is continuing to talk at their teleconference. He is now saying, regarding Jimmy Graham, he says, with Jimmy Graham, I think it's a good example of where we're all connected on a vision. I would certainly like a follow-up to that question and how that vision is defined. If the vision means, holy crap, our tight end position sucks and we need a tight end and we have to have somebody help out, if that's what he means by vision, the fact that in a very small scale, you're seeing the same horrible tight end play that we're seeing and you need somebody who could possibly be competent, then yeah, I like that idea that you're still collecting, compiling all
Bears connected to quarterbacks, you know, Bridgewater and Foles and Dalton and all that. It made me feel pretty good that they knew where they were until I saw that Jimmy Graham signing, and then the confidence meter went right back to zero. So I don't really like Ryan Pace. I have a pretty solid – I feel like my opinion of him is pretty cemented at this point. But if he could just bluntly say, we need to improve our quarterback if we want to win the Super Bowl, that'd make me feel better.
Bobby, good call as always. Good health to you. Appreciate it. There is a theme developing on the text line here at 67011. It says, they won't ever say it, says the 309, but I'd like to hear them say how they've studied their evaluation process to understand why they keep missing on early round draft picks. 708 says, I want Pace to admit his drafts have been less than stellar and he's trying to fix it. See, that kind of, we know that. That's right in front of us. That is made manifest. It's clear he knows it. It's clear that we know it. I don't think there's necessarily insight for him to sort of, you know, self-flagellate. That would be fun, too. Or if he just kind of falls on his sword and says, well, you know, obviously I need to be better. You know, that a lot of that is coach speak. A lot of that is the new sort of postmodern coach speak. We're always, we is pointing the thumb. I have to coach better. You know, any coach who starts with that, first and foremost, I have to coach better. It sounds great, but 90% of them don't mean it. And they're pissed at the players for not executing their scheme properly or not remembering the play. So I don't necessarily need to hear him say some of the stuff. For me, it's about process and it's about what to expect. For example, if they actually laid out today, and maybe this is more a Nagy than a Pace thing, if they actually laid out today, this job, and not just saying, well, we want competition at all positions, we always have competition at all positions, because that's kind of BS. If they said the quarterback job is up for grabs, we do not have, between Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles, we do not have an in-house favorite for the position. We are going to set this up where they are given an opportunity in practice and perhaps in exhibition games where the offense is going to be on the field more than it otherwise would be. They are going to have an opportunity, each man, to prove he deserves to be the starting quarterback. I don't think there's a downside to that. It may not be what they want to do. And if that's the case, and they say, there's always competition. Mitch is our, his, he had said, well, and actually I got to go back and look at the truth of it at the time, because he could have been lying, not lying. When Pace previously spoke, he said, Mitch is our starter. And he said that because there was one quarterback on the entire Bears roster. So sure, were they to have played a game that day, Mitchell Trubisky would have been the starter. That's not true anymore. They now have two and a nominal quarterback on the roster after the trade for Nick Foles and the re-signing of Tyler Bray, I don't know where Tyler Bray is going to be on the list of ubiquitous, meaningless Bears. The Harvey Unga team, like the guy who was just kind of always on the Bears and never mattered. He literally, that guy could, you know, walk into a restaurant when you could walk into a restaurant and he could say, I'm on the Chicago Bears. You know, three full seasons of the Tyler Bray experience saying that, yes, I'm on the Chicago Bears. And he is. And he hasn't done anything material. But there are three quarterbacks on the roster. And I would like to know more about what we're not going to learn about the draft, right? That we know that anything about the draft is going to be, it's going to be out there for public consumption because that's what they do, and general managers in this season lie about everything. 815 says, at least we can play the I'm fired up drinking game. Well, that only if you include euphemisms for fired up. Are you, in fact, including excited, I feel great about this team, anything just the sort of bland optimism, positivity? And this time of year, there's nothing wrong with doing a drinking game because no one's really, there's nowhere to go drive, I guess. Where did I read the tweet? I'm sorry that I can't attribute this, but it was lovely. And someone said, the days now are divided between coffee drinking hours and wine drinking hours. And I'm just thinking that's really how we're measuring things right now. And I can't advise enough that please, when you get the opportunity, whether or not you want to put on a mask, and I did when I went grocery shopping yesterday, I made a mask. I actually did. I got on YouTube and I watched a bunch of videos and I made a makeshift mask. Apparently, if you don't have an actual surgical mask, 100% cotton is good. Cotton poly blend, by my research, by unscientific research, but I looked at a bunch of places. If you have a t-shirt that's 50% cotton, 50% polyester, that is considered like the next best thing to the surgical mask material, not the N95 mask, which is like the respirator mask. But I found one. It was an old Cork and Carry t-shirt. Shout out to Cork and Carry on Southwestern. And I had it in the back of a drawer that Bill Guidy had given me at a Boris and Bernstein remote from God knows when. And I said, here it is. This Cork and Carry t-shirt is literally going to save my life because I'm going to make a surgical mask out of it. But later on, we took a walk around the neighborhood a little bit as a whole family, all four of us. It was enough Fortnite. It was my daughter got her homework done and my son was on the computer. I said, that's it. We're going to Scooters. And if you haven't experienced Scooters Custard on Belmont and Paulina, they have a special social distancing arrangement. You don't even go in. There's an outside window that's cut into the brick. And you can go there. You can only stand within a certain distance. When it's your turn to go order, you get yours, and then you walk away. They have everything sort of demarcated with chalk on the sidewalk for where people stand. And it is the best frozen custard you've ever had in your life. And it was a beautiful day to walk and to see little kids on their bikes and on their big wheels. And so many parents with their kids who are doing sidewalk chalk or who are putting little paintings in the windows, and just seeing other human beings, even if within 10 feet, is really life-affirming. Frank in Oak Park is out today. This is special. He's on the score. What's up, Frank? Frank, you there?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like you to know that, I feel for in everything that you and the people of the score going through your show and its various incarnations has been a rock in my day for, many years. So, people like me, we care what's going on. And as far as what the beers can do to make me feel more secure, it's not pace, it's Nagy saying that he's actually going to play starters more in the preseason, because particularly if you're going to have a quarterback competition, if that's what they really are going to have, I don't know how you cannot be playing your starters with, giving both those guys a shot with the starters to see what they do. As far as pace is concerned, there was a really good, I think it was a Weederer column, I picked it up online from the Tribune, about draft picks. It went back to 2010, so you're talking about like three regimes, and how effective they were with picks rounds five through seven. And, I mean, God, if you can get like a 30% rate where these guys can do anything, and I think actually like Pace's predecessor, Mr. Lanyards, was better as far as having guys who were at least like functional in the league at this point. Pace had more guys who were like already washed out here. But when you don't have a first round draft pick, obviously the 2 second rounders have to be immediate impact guys, whether they're starters or whether they're like, heavy contributors in some other way, immediate contributors. But you have to get some gold because they don't have a fourth rounder, right? It's just like sixth and seventh round picks now. Did they even have a fifth round pick? So it's going to be, with the depth they've lost, they got to get, they have to kind of overproduce from history with those drafts or picks later on in the draft. So that's the only thing they can say that's going to make me feel better. What's going to make me feel better is what they do in the draft and what they do between now and the beginning of the season.
Thanks as always, Frank. Be safe. And obviously that's actions more than words. But if you notice what Ryan Pace has done, he has, while his own first-round picks have been failing, he has been stocking up on other teams' failed first-round picks to see if he can take some advantage there. Jermaine Effetti, failed first-round pick. Barcavius Mingo, failed first-round pick. Artie Burns, failed first-round pick. And I don't necessarily mind that. I've generally been a believer in pedigree. At some point, if all of the cognoscenti thought that this kid was that good and that some team wanted to take him first. It has to matter. Some of that talent's got to be in there somewhere. And it's weird to think that there are so many teams. You know, the Rams think that of Leonard Floyd. Now, there are others who are thinking that of Ryan Pace's picks. But the margin for error is gone. And to address something else that you said there, Frank, I don't think we're at our same level of trust when Nagy approaches the preseason. And he says, yeah, we don't really need that. We know what's going on in practice. We get more out of practice. Well, you know what? That was great when you started, and that was great when everything looked good early on, and everything was all seashells and balloons in that regard. And there was a huge benefit of the doubt when he said, we know. And I was with him because I don't want to get anybody hurt either. But, you know, there is a time now when he's going to have to play these guys. We're going to have to see it, and he may have to come off the, yeah, trust me, we get more out of practice. Maybe not so much anymore. Might have to be out there in front of us. We might have to see it. And I think you're right in that regard. I'm Dan Bernstein. I am here till noon on Sports Radio 670, The Score. Dan Zimborski is going to talk some baseball with us at 10. He is a senior writer at Fangraphs who's been doing some cool stuff with using some of the new truth about the season and the new timing of a potential season to see how that changes some of the projection metrics. And also he's done a deep dive on what injury means, what serious injury can mean to the career arc of players, especially pitchers. And we can talk about Michael Kopech in that context as well. Then we are going to have Bears news. We are going to turn around the Bears audio from the Pace and Nagy press conference as soon as we possibly can, so then you can hear them in their words and react to it, because I think it matters sometimes to hear how they say certain things. We'll all react to that. Dan Durkin is going to join us at 11. Steve Lyons is going to join us at 11:30, always interesting and entertaining. And if we have time, I hope we do, I've got another really good Who Am I that we're going to play a little bit later on in the show. I'm Dan Bernstein. And you're listening to The Score. Here's something cool when we come back. Ian Happ has a podcast. The Cubs' Ian Happ is doing a podcast. He's calling it The Compound. And he hosted it, I guess, or he had a bunch of guests on. Shortstop Zach Short was with him. And they were talking to Kyle Schwarber. And it was really some of the most interesting stuff I think I've ever heard from Kyle Schwarber about his injury and how he returned. So this is sort of where we are in the world right now. We're going to eavesdrop on the Ian Happ podcast with some interesting Cubs stuff coming your way next on The Score.
Delicious.
Welcome back to Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. Dan Bernstein with you. We've got Jay Zawoski, our executive producer. Christopher Dickens is on the board today. Looking forward to some baseball talk with Dan Zimborski of Fangraphs coming up just after the top of the hour. And that's when the teleconference is going to be starting with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. As we get news from the teleconference, we will bring that to you and have a chance to react to it in the 10 o'clock hour. And then as soon as they're done talking, we can flip everything around and bring that audio right back so you can hear them in their own words. So there is a podcast called The Compound. Not exactly sure what the reference is, but it's Ian Happ, Nico Horner, Dakota Meeks, and Zach Short. And in this segment that you're going to hear, it's mostly Happ doing the interviewing here. Smart and interesting guy. I really enjoyed every conversation that I've had with him. And they're talking with Kyle Schwarber about his 2016 and about coming back from the injury and getting the news that he was ahead of schedule and able to play in the World Series.
I remember going out to like take BP, coming in, changing, and going out for the game, and you were still on the field. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's going to blow out his back.
Well, speaking of you being flabbergasted, Ian, you were pretty flabbergasted when the doctor even told you that you had a chance to play, right?
Yeah, you know, that was that's kind of a crazy story within itself. So kind of like every 2 months, I'd go to the doctor in Dallas. So the head Dallas Cowboys doctor did the surgery. And so I'd have to go down there about every 2 months, get a checkup. And it just happened to be the off day that the team was going out to L.A., And so me and Matt Johnson, who was a trainer at the time, we went to Dallas, and then we were going to beat the team out in L.A. And, like, jokingly, you know, like, I would, like, they would type up questions, like, Schwartz, you want to add any questions? I'm like, I was like, yeah. And so I typed, like, World Series question mark at the bottom of the paper. And, yeah, I'm like, jokingly, I'm like, ah, this, like, literally the timetable was for me to come back. First off, it was going to be spring training the following year.
Yeah.
As we kept going through these visits, it was winter ball. And then we get there for this checkup, and he doesn't even read the questions, the doctor. He's just going through the whole skit with the knee where he's pulling on it and checking the stability and the strength. And he looks at me and goes, you know what, your knee looks really great. I'm really surprised how well this is going. And I know you guys are on a big run here, and I really wouldn't be against you, like, pinch hitting or something like that, and if you guys make it the World Series. And I, like, jumped off the table. I'm like, what? No way. I'm like, give me the phone. I'm calling Theo right now. Let's go. I need to get to Arizona or L.A. I need to hit. Give me a bat. Let's go. So we get done, and I'm like trying to, like, I'm with Matt, and Matt's like, do not call Theo right now. We have to run this through PJ. I'm like, why? I just want to go right to the source. He goes, I'll get in trouble. I'm like, that makes sense. So I get a text from Theo. He goes, we'll see you in LA tonight, and we'll talk tomorrow. And we went to LA that night, and I wanted to go right to the cage. I think we got in at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. I went right to Dodger Stadium, me, Bussy, and I was in there probably for about an hour taking hacks. And that's something I'll never forget.
That is an animated Kyle Schwarber. I don't know that I've ever heard him quite like that. And I didn't know that it was that dramatic when he got that information. That's pretty cool stuff to hear it from him and to get that sort of validation of your rehab. How often do you go to the doctor and the doctor says something is ahead of schedule or actually better than you thought? It's almost always worse, but that's you can imagine him almost literally jumping off the table. That's good stuff. But see, that's what happens when you get teammates doing the interviewing, because the Kyle Schwarber, who is always so careful and measured around us, obviously lets his guard down around his teammates. And as we talk about that World Series, we should let you know that tonight on The Score, starting at 6 p.m., we'll be replaying NLDS Game 3 from that 2016 season. It was when the Giants beat the Cubs 6-5 in 13 innings. Spoiler alert, I always say that. But these are interactive broadcasts that I know people have been really enjoying. We started them on Wednesday, and they are going to run all the way through Friday the 17th, which will be World Series Game 7. You definitely don't want to miss that. But these have all been really cool because it's Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer, who are joined by Joe Ostrowski live prior to every game for the pregame show. And then after the third inning, they're all there live again, interacting about what it was like being there. Same thing after the seventh inning. And then when it ends, they take calls about that specific game, a post-game show, an ex post facto game show, actually. And it's an interactive broadcast that The Score is doing of all 17 games. So enjoy that tonight. If you're looking to feel some baseball on, maybe as it gets warmer, you want to open the windows and just hear the crack of the bat and have it sound like baseball a little bit, that will be 6 o'clock. And actually, that's another nice thing to do also, if you can find a safe place to do it and wash your hands really, really well before and after. But if you know somebody in your family is healthy enough, throw a baseball. Go throw a baseball. Taking a walk and throwing a baseball, you talk about something that is really good for one's mental health. I was looking at watching all these major leaguers on their various social media doing what they're doing. You see Joey Gallo set up a batting cage in his dining room. It looks like he's in some kind of high-rise corner, gorgeous condo, these big plate glass windows. And it looks like when the video starts and it's just him with that big mammoth swing, just putting the ball in the tee and ripping it into a net. And he says that his neighbors are going to get mad at him because of the sound of the crack of the bat. Obviously it has to sound like a gunshot, but I've been watching way too many fail videos, way too many, like, and it's, they're funny, but now you're at the point where you kind of, so much horrible is going on that it almost makes you feel bad to laugh at the misfortune of others. That there are other videos, some of the Rex Chapman stuff that's actually showing stuff that works, and the, you know, Domino's videos or the Rube Goldberg machines or, you know, ping pong ball in the cup stuff. But I thought the Joey Gallo video was absolutely ripe for him just pulling one right through this high-rise plate glass window. Because I don't care how soundproof or anything proof those things are. What's exit velocity is something like that off a tee is probably less because he's supplying all the power himself. Let's just say it's 90 miles an hour instead of getting the elastic collision from the pitch velocity. That's breaking that glass. That's what I'm thinking. So when I turn on these videos now, I'm always expecting the worst because there's a lot of content out there. My daughter downloaded TikTok, and now there's always another thing. But I didn't know. See, I don't have TikTok. I only get what's on Twitter. So I didn't know that it starts. There's an algorithm that starts selecting TikTok videos for what it thinks you're going to like. I couldn't, based on what's in my Twitter timeline, the algorithm would think I'm a total psycho based on how varied all of these TikToks are, because they're actually coming from people who happen to be posting them. Our number is 312-644-6767. We're going to have some time to grab some calls as the Bears news starts rolling in. We're just minutes away from the Bears general manager Ryan Pace and coach Matt Nagy taking questions from reporters. I hope they come at him, because you don't often get that chance to have Ryan Pace on the record answering questions from something other than in-house media. As we get news, we will turn it around. We will let you know what they are saying. Dan Zimborski is going to join us next. You should be following him on Twitter because he's really good. He is a senior writer at FanGraphs who's done some work looking at some of the prediction measures to determine what a truncated season might look like, and also the effects of injury on career arcs. A lot of smart people with a lot of time and a lot of data to do a lot of work. So he is going to talk to us. A little baseball talk ahead of what's going to become pretty football-y from here on in toward noon on a Friday. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.